Welcome to Lexis, the podcast all about language and linguistics. I'm Lisa Casey.
I'm Jackie Glancy.
And I'm Dan Clayton. Okay, so on this episode of Lexis, we're really pleased to welcome Fiona McPherson, who is a senior editor at the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary. So welcome, Fiona. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
And we're going to be talking about Word of the Year 2023, and maybe a bit more broadly about kind of Word of the Year as a concept or phenomenon. Yeah. So as any astute English language student or member of the public will be aware, the winner of 2023 was Riz.
Yep.
So how did you decide which words would actually make the shortlist of eight, wasn't it? I think the shortlist.
Yeah, we came up with a shortlist of eight. The interesting thing for me for Word of the Year is always that it takes you away from the day job, if you like. Mm. Day job's always about working on words that are going to go into a dictionary or, well, the OED in this case, or potentially, because, you know, some things will research, don't quite, you know, make the grade. But with Word of the Year, you can look at language in a completely different way. These words might end up in a dictionary. They might already be in the OED or another dictionary. They might never do it. So it's about looking at our corpora. We have a corpus that's got 22 billion words on it, and it's drawn from mostly web sources, so news reports, from blogs, that kind of thing. And it's updated every month. Currently, as I said, 22 billion words on there. And we can look at that to see if we can see any trends, to see if we can see which words are maybe being used more this year than they were last year, or maybe didn't even really have much of a presence the year before. So we do that, look to see if there's any story behind some of them, see if we can think of reasons why this might be, and then choose those as a shortlist. And as you say, the shortlist was then narrowed down to four by the help of the public. But yeah, it's about trying to spot trends, trying to spot increase in usage, and then think about what that might be.
And so it was initially eight, then it was public vote. Kind of, it was like sort of paired off like a kind of FA Cup.
Yes, it was. So people could vote for whichever one they preferred in that head to head. It's sometimes difficult really to tie words up in a complete narrative, but they were sort of seen as if maybe they were having a bit of a relationship. You know, they had the relationship between the two words. They were in a very broad category, and then people would choose and then narrow it down to the final four, which we then looked at and then made our decision.
So the final decision came down to lexicographers.
It did, yes.
Right, yeah. So you talked us through some of the criteria that you're using there. So increased use, maybe sort of trends around them, a story connected to them. So with Riz in particular, what was the story there?
Okay, so with Riz, it would be a stretch, I think, to try and maybe claim that people are more interested in, you know, style and attractiveness this year than they were before. Because I think that's the kind of thing people have been interested in that for, you know, centuries probably, but, you know, for a long time. What was interesting, I think, for Riz was it was one that we didn't see very much of at all the year before. There were a couple, but not really. And it was this year that it took off. And initially, well, it still is very much, I think, associated with how to make yourself sound old, the younger generation, but definitely internet culture, okay, very much an online word, if you like. But it started to break away from that. And I think it was down to, there was a Tom Holland interview, which was, I think it was BuzzFeed, but it was widely reported in the news and then the mainstream print media type thing, where he was asked whether he had Riz. And he said, "I have no Riz whatsoever. I have limited Riz." Okay, well, you've got a little bit of Riz then, even if it's limited, but still, let's not, you know, analyze that too much. And that was reported quite widely. And so that brought it a little bit out of its initial internet young people only into a bit more of a common currency. And that's why we saw it then being used more. So I think that was its story. It was a word which is starting to make its way into the wider world, if you like. And that's how language works, though. You know, someone has to use something once. It doesn't matter if it's a particular group, you know, it's no less valid because it's younger people using it than it would be if it was anybody using it. It's just really interesting to view how that whole process works and how it keeps working. And that's what keeps English thriving as a language.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting as well you say about the kind of use of it, because in that example you quoted, it's used, it's that sort of functional kind of way it's used as well, isn't it? Where you can see that it's being used with another word, limited riz, and then you think, oh, this has got potential not just to be a kind of standalone word, but fitting into a, you know, morphology syntax.
Exactly. And that, I mean, who knows, okay, whether we're going to be talking about riz this time next year, okay? As I said, to be a good candidate or, you know, good winner of Word of the Year, that isn't really that important. But you've hit on an interesting point, because normally when a word will, an indication that a word will stick around is if it has that productivity. Mm. So here we're seeing it used exactly the way you thought, you say. There's also, it's used as a verb. We can see some examples of it. So you can, usually with up, but to riz up, so to chat someone up, to, you know, try and charm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you're seeing that, no guarantees, but it's normally a good indication that a word, you know, it's got legs, a better way of putting it. It's got that productivity. It's being used and in the same way that other words, which are much more established, are used. And I think there's viz-coloured glasses as well. I haven't seen any examples, but you could imagine somebody being described as rizzy. I don't know, something like
plausible.
That.
Yeah.
You can imagine it. It doesn't sound odd. So it's a good indication that maybe this is a word that has a bit more staying power, but we'll just have to see. It's no point in making predictions about it, because you can just look quite foolish when they don't.
Yes, well, when I looked at some of the words from 2022, and I saw, I think it was the Macquarie Dictionary had like Nepo Baby on it. I thought, I've never heard that. I don't think that's going to catch on.
And I'll it's never been
a year. I know, year of the Nepo Baby, Nepo families, everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So just don't get into the business of making predictions about what's here or what's not.
Yeah. And was there something about the actual, like, formation of it, you know, the word formation process that interested you as a lexicographer?
There was. I mean, I like double Z always works well in a word. I don't know. It gives it, I don't know, some added visual appeal and also sound appeal. You know, it's quite a satisfying word to say. But yeah, in terms of its etymology, so it obviously comes from charisma. There's an obvious parallel there and relationship there. But it's not just the shortening of charisma, because that would be chariz. It's been taken from the middle of the word. And that's actually relatively unusual formation in English. Normally you do just lop the end off a word. Mm. Fridge is a word that comes from the middle of refrigerator, or flu from the middle of influenza. And somebody actually, when I was talking to them about this, they said, oh yeah, spenny, as in expensive, you know, when something's spenny. I think that's more of a regional usage. I think it might be sort of Newcastle, north of England.
Right. Yeah, it's not, and I'm not that believing that.
That comes from the middle of expensive. So there's three examples, but, you know, there are a lot more than three words in English language. It is fairly unusual. And, well, that just, you know, that just makes me interested in it from a lexicographical point of view anyway, regardless of what it might mean. It just, that's something else to recommend it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So in terms of the sort of process, again, you said it was a public vote was part of it, and then it went to lexicographers to decide the final four. Yeah. Last year was goblin mode, wasn't it? That was a public vote for the final. So what was behind that move to involve the public a bit more?
I think it was just shaking it up a little bit, in the same way that, you know, we last year was the first year we ever got the public involved. And everybody uses language, you know, it's the people are the gatekeepers of language, if that doesn't sound too pompous. People are interested in it. Word of the Year is something that people really get interested in. I mean, I'm asked in about March, what's going to be, are you doing Word of the Year? Well, yes, but it's only March. So people are always interested in it, and it always promotes a lot of conversation. So it made sense to think, well, let's see what the public think. This year, same idea, but just let's do it slightly differently. So we had this voting head-to-head idea, and then we thought, well, let's us look at the what the final four are, and then we can make that decision. So it was just really doing it slightly differently, because Word of the Year has been going a long time, and it's a good thing, but it's been going a long time, and it's Word of the Year season. Lots of people are involved in doing different Words of the Year, you know, different dictionaries, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, why not just do something slightly different again to keep it a little bit fresh?
Partly, if I'm being cynical, marketing exercise. And partly,
well, I don't think you would believe me if I said that wasn't anything to do with it at all. Of course, it's all publicity, isn't it? And yeah, there, obviously there's an element of that. And if you get public involved in it, that would be an obvious way. But it wasn't just that.
Yeah, it captures the imagination, definitely, yeah, doesn't it? I think it is. Exactly. It's what, you know, there's no harm in conversations around it. It's positive to hear people talking about language in a way that celebrates it.
Exactly. And I live in Munich and I've had lots of German friends asking me about it as well. So they're really interested in it too. And right, it turns out actually that in German, the young people use Riz as well.
Really?
Yeah, I suspect right, that. So I was like, well, there you go. It's an international word as well.
Oh, great. Even better.
I think a lot of the vocabulary that younger Germans use, quite a lot of it sometimes is from English or based on English. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when you look back at previous words of the year, winners, maybe ones that made the shortlist, or any that you either feel particularly pleased about, proud of, or ones that you look back and think, what were we thinking?
What were we thinking? Well, yeah, it's interesting looking back because it really, when you see the list, you go, oh yeah, I remember that's when that was a big thing, or you know, this was all people were talking about. I think for me, it's always going to be when there's a little bit of a story to tell around it. The one that always sticks in my mind, and so I suppose you could say I was quite proud of it, was Selfie, because that was the year that I think Word of the Year just went massive. Mm. It had been a thing before and it was interesting. People would talk about it, would report on it and everything. But I remember Selfie was so easy as well to pick. We did it slightly differently then because it was quite a few years ago now, and we didn't have the same resources, you know, year on year. The information that you can get to make these decisions changes. And I think we just sat there and someone said, well, it's going to be Selfie, isn't it? We all just went, yeah. And I think someone might have tried to, just for the kind of sake of, well, maybe we should just make sure, you know, but we were all like, no, it's going to be Selfie. And it was because that was really when you were able to take selfies so much more easily because the technology allowed it to happen. So they became more ubiquitous. I mean, you always, I suppose, could have got a camera and held it out, but you're never going to get the same kind of thing. And that's why selfie went so huge, I think. But even then, you still had people, I remember people saying to me, I've never heard of it. And that's when you just have to remember that just because you're immersed in a particular world, not everybody is. Yeah, and when you actually said to them, well, it's this. So they knew what the concept was. They just had never called it a selfie, I suppose. Mm. And then someone said, oh, I don't like it. But what it turned out they didn't like was the fact that everybody takes selfies and it, or yes, said kind of thing. The word itself they didn't particularly dislike. And of course, that was older as well than we thought. It wasn't actually brand new, which is what happens all the time with words. So that one did stick in my mind quite a lot. Other ones, yeah. I mean, when we chose the emoji, if I'm going to be honest, that probably wasn't necessarily my favourite. I'm not going to go as far to say as what were we thinking.
I can kind of see what you were thinking with that. I think that's quite, I quite like that one.
Right, well, it did divide opinion, I think, it's safe in the public. Well, because obviously it's not a word. But then you get people thinking that goblin mode isn't a word because it's actually two words. You know, somebody actually said that to me. And so I had, you know, you come out with the, well, it's a single unit of meaning, but a single unit of meaning of the year just doesn't exactly.
No.
I think with the emoji, what was interesting was that it was, we weren't trying to say that it was replacing language, but it's used as an enhancement of language. Mm. Was it a picture can paint 1,000 words? As long as, and this is perhaps where the problem is, as long as with emojis, there's a shared understanding of what it's supposed to convey, then it can enhance language. So with that tears of joy emoji, by putting that in a text or whatever to someone or a post, you're quickly getting the idea of how you're feeling about it rather than necessarily writing, you know, screeds and screeds of words. But it is very much an enhancement rather than necessarily a replacement. Mm. And because you have that problem, as I said, of people not necessarily having that shared understanding. You know, there's the old stories, which I think are probably true, about people writing LOL at the bottom of messages because they thought they were meaning lots of love and it's not then quite the appropriate place to in laughter, you know. So I think it was probably an interesting experiment, although I always feel on much safer ground talking about actual words because that's what job is. But again, it's talking about communication, isn't it? It's talking about how we communicate and maybe the way that's slightly changed. Some people don't really like Riz because they think it's an abbreviation. But as I said, fridge is an abbreviation as well. So is anybody necessarily objecting to something like that? And I think it's all about familiarity. A new word or a new term has to be uttered for the first time. All the words we use now, even if they're like 500 years old, they were once new. And I like the idea of someone in the Middle Ages getting upset about someone using a word for the first time. They're like, never going to catch on, you know?
They did, didn't they? I mean, there's various commentators, like in the kind of golden age of the grammarians, who's saying we mustn't use the word mob, you know, or... Exactly. I think there were all sorts of words that are just basically standard English now, aren't they, that were complained about.
But now we would never complain about them because, well, it's a proper word. We know what it means. Mm. It can be disconcerting if you're living through a time where words are changing meanings or new words are coming in, especially if they're a word that you maybe feel that you don't necessarily have a reason to use because you've got another one that would be perfectly adequate. But English is rich. It's rich in synonyms. And even no two words, even if they seem like synonyms, are exactly the same because you would use one in a different context, or if you know, in a friends or in a formal situation, even if they sort of mean the same thing. So, sorry, I've wandered off the subject.
No, that's fascinating because, I mean, it ties in with the whole sort of idea of language change that A-level students study as part of, you know, this is one of the places we sort of look at new words and word of the year is part of this sort of bigger picture. Yeah. So I think that kind of idea that if you're looking back at the sort of history of the language from its earliest days, you know, Old English, and then through Norman invasion, you've got sort of layering, haven't you, of different types. But as you say, they've all got subtly different meanings in different contexts. It's just interesting kind of thinking as well about the emoji, because, you know, that seat struck me as a really interesting choice about, you know, this is something that's communicative. It means something. It's also, you know, it means different things as well, doesn't it? You can see that crying laughing emoji has been used by some people to indicate they're laughing at you, they're mocking you.
Yeah, and then it can also be used in a slightly different way, so they're laughing with you. But then again, like, you know, language will also work in that kind of way, depending on which words you've chosen. Somebody else might slightly take it, you know, differently. And it's all part of the same thing, even if it's made up of a picture and not letters.
Yeah, and it's just interesting as well when you talked about selfie and the kind of complaints about selfie from people who either hadn't heard it then because they might have been outside the demographic who would have been doing selfies, but also the complaint about it as a word is so tied in with the complaint about, as you said, the kind of act of taking a selfie, self-obsession, narcissism, you know.
And I think that's what people, well, I mean, maybe some people didn't like the word. You know, we there are words that we like. Always sounds a little bit funny saying that it's such a subjective thing, because obviously doing the job I do, I have to remain completely objective about work. It doesn't matter whether I want to use it or what my personal opinion on it is, it's words. But people do like particular words for different reasons and dislike words for other reasons. But normally it's because of the way the word is used, or the people that are using it, or the fact that they're hearing it constantly. Or maybe sometimes that they don't, as you say, they're outside the demographic for whatever reason, and that's okay. And there may be an element of that with Riz, with some people who are only hearing it for the first time and see it as an ephemeral word or word that only young people say. Well, a word that only young people say is not something that I really have much truck with, because so what? You know, would you be so worried if it was a word that only old people said? I mean, come on, it's all part of language, and that's what fascinates me about it all.
So just thinking about this year's Word of the Year then, and the shortlist more generally, I mean, you said you didn't think there was much of a kind of argument for saying that Riz tells us we're suddenly interested in fashion and things like that. But what do you think the sort of rest of the shortlist might tell us?
Well, I think prompt was on there. So prompt used in the AI sense. So as of the instruction that you give to an AI chatbot or an AI algorithm or whatever, in order to generate the content that you're going to get back. 2023 clearly has, AI has been a massive story. And what I thought was interesting here is that was also telling part of the story, but it was focusing much more on the human agency of it. So much of the story is about the doom and gloom and the terror of AI and what it might be capable of and rendering us all obsolete. The depth of humanity kind of idea. Prompt is very much focusing on the human part of that, because it's about what a human is putting in order to get something back out. But I liked that. So it was a good way of you know, giving a nod to the fact that AI has been such a big story. And as you'll know, quite a few other dictionaries have chosen AI words. Hallucinate was one, and AI itself. Yeah. But it was that appealed to me as saying something slightly different. And prompt, not a new word by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a new development and a new sense. So I think that probably definitely said something about it. But some of the others on the shortlist, de-influencing, I think, that's one of the ones we have on there. I think that's quite interesting because it's moving away from the, obviously, the sort of opposite of influencing. It's encouraging us to maybe think about shedding some of that and, you know, doing things slightly differently. That probably does speak quite a lot to the culture we find ourselves in. I think the one that really struck me as well, parasocial, which was on the initial shortlist, didn't make the top flight. And that's actually a word that's already in the OED. But I think that says a lot about society. It says a lot about, you know, the kind of relationships that social media can now encourage, I suppose, is the way to put it. So yeah, parasocial, it's designating a relationship that's characterized by sort of one-sided, unreciprocated sense of intimacy that a fan or a follower feels for a famous or prominent figure. And of course, I think the reason we're seeing a lot of use of that now in an increase, it's been around for a long time. 1956 is actually the first example we've got of it. And it's coined by two US sociologists to describe the kind of relationship experienced by members of an audience with regard to the performers that they were seeing in mass media. And I suppose then television, because I guess that's when television was really coming of age, even though it'd been around for a long time. It's maybe the sort of time period where it was becoming more ubiquitous. And I think what's the reason we're probably seeing a lot more usage of that now is because social media really allows us to be able to feel that we're quite close to some of the, you know, the celebrities or whoever that we're fond of. We feel that we can have a more of a relationship with them, even if that relationship obviously is one-sided. And, you know, some of the really engaged celebrities on social media, it might not necessarily be them. It could be just being run by an account manager. But it gives us that feeling that we do know someone more than we perhaps would have. I mean, even if I think back to sort of my adolescence, social media didn't exist, and you had to wait until the person, you know, that you liked, the actor or the musician or whatever, did an interview for a newspaper or a magazine, and you poured over it.
That's the only
access that you got. Yeah. Whereas now there's access to so much more information, so it's not surprising then that I think we're seeing the use of parasocial coming more to the fore. And so that I found that really interesting. So I think that definitely says something about the way society is, or the difference we can see in it from 10 years ago, 20 years ago even.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. I mean, I totally share that experience. It's the I remember, you know, used to read NME and Melody Maker for like favourite bands. Used to be so excited if they just got a kind of mention. And now you get into a band or a performer and you can look at everything up that they've ever done within seconds.
Yeah, and sometimes you wonder if some of the mystery and mystique is being lost. But I don't know. Yeah. There is an element of that. But I also like being able to find out what they're up to.
Exactly. Well, binge on it.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's a really interesting one, isn't it? And I suppose it poses a slightly different kind of perspective on online life, doesn't it? Because quite a lot of online words have been maybe a bit kind of faddy and throwaway and fun, you know, like to stan someone and all of that kind of idea. Which I guess parasocial is kind of describing it as well, isn't it? But in a more scientific way.
And it's a very sort of scientific sounding word for something which is, well, I'm not going to say it's not scientific, but you know what I mean? It's interesting that it's such a kind of highfalutin scientific type of word to describe something that's really, I think, well, we all think, oh yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah.
No, that was the name for it.
Mm. And then just sort of finally, when you think about Oxford Word of the Year, And it is Oxford Word of the Year, isn't it? It's not the OED's Word of the Year.
That's right. It's Oxford Word of the Year. It's not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So when you think about that in relation to other dictionaries, do you keep an eye on what they do? So, you know, Collins always seems to jump in there first, and then you've got...
Oh, yeah. We always keep an eye. Of course we do. Well, I mean, we're interested anyway,
yes,
you know, but we do keep a look out, and there's always opinions on whether, you know, someone's made a good choice, someone's not. In all honesty, normally I can think, oh yeah, I can see completely why they've chosen that. I was going to say it's not a competition. You know, there's nothing that says one word is better as word of the year than another. Mm. And there are different criteria that people have. Some dictionaries, it's based on lookups.
So the words that is that like Merriam-Webster?
Exactly. Merriam-Webster do that. And actually, that's a really good way of doing it. Because what you can then do is think, well, why are people looking up this word? Coronation was one of the ones on their shortlist.
Yeah.
And because people were obviously looking up because, well, the UK had a coronation this year, you know. And similarly, I think Indite or maybe as well. So that's very much based on what people are looking up, and they use that to inform their choice. So certainly in that way, but when you're choosing things for different reasons, I don't think there's any one that would unisonly say was better. I mean, obviously the one that I'm going to say best, it would be our one, but that's only because, well, it's my job to say that as well, I suppose.
Yes.
I think it's just interesting how many different people come up with it. It's not always just dictionaries, you know, and you mentioned Australian Macquarie come up with them, the Australian Dictionary, people do those. The American Dialect Society.
Oh, they have the big vote, don't they?
Yeah, and they choose
an event.
It's like the Grammys, I suppose.
Yes.
They have different categories of, you know, I'm sure they do have on slang word of the year, and then they'll announce that in January usually.
Yeah, I can never stay up late enough to follow it online. I think one of the linguists we've talked to on the show before, Kelly Wright's involved in that.
Oh, yes.
And Zimmer as well. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I've done an event with them for the last couple of years where it's called That Word Chat.
Right.
And it's had somebody from all of the big hitters, if you like, of Word of the Year. And it's a really nice event because we're all in the same boat. I think that's probably why I can never think of it as it's not a competition. It's not about whether one company's words or one dictionary's words better than the other. Because when we're sitting there chatting about it, it's all just really, everybody's just really invested and really interested in it. The American Dialect Society was obviously is a big hitter in it as well. But it did make me think of the Grammys and all the categories.
Yeah. No, that's great. No, thanks very much, Fiona. That's brilliant. Really interesting.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you.